Welcome to the Annie Jennings PR Poker Po interview series, a poker how-to podcast series featuring the greatest and most accomplished poker players in the industry. Our guest poker pro today is Lou Krieger. Lou is the author of numerous books on poker, including Poker for Dummies, Internet Poker, How to Play and Beat Online Poker Games, The Poker Player's Bible, and the book we are featuring today, Secrets the Pros Won't Tell You About Winning Hold'em Poker, written with co-author Sherry Bykofsky. Welcome, Lou, to the Poker Pro podcast series.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here, and this is one of my favorite books. So,
isn't it, though?
Let's get on.
I got to say it's mine, too, but I'll tell you, I'm an easy audience to please because I love all of your work, and I basically purchased all of your books, so we're in for a lot of great information today from our wonderful poker pro, Lou Krieger. Now, Lou, let's just jump right into your chapter on tactics, strategies, and ploys taken directly from Secrets the Pros Won't Tell You. So you say that secrets, tactics, strategies, and ploys, this is where the poker rubber meets the road, and that without these strategies, without tactics, without a few good tricks up your sleeve, all the conceptual knowledge, the mathematics, the odds, the theory won't do you any good. So now we're going to ask you about some of the tricks and tools of the trade every poker player should know to play winning hold'em poker. So here we go. Are you ready?
I am ready.
All right, now, tactic or strategy number one. How do you play against a newbie or a fish? As I say in the poker world, a fish. Do you simply call them with any two cards?
No, you really don't want to do that. A fish means that somebody is a poor player, but it doesn't tell you what kind of poor player he or she may be. You can have fish that are bad players because they play far too many hands and they call too often with weak hands, and you can have fish that are poor players because they're very, very cautious, overly conservative, very tight, they're reluctant to enter into hands, and the way you play against one type of opponent is not the same way you play against another. For instance, you really don't want to call with any two cards against somebody that plays far too many hands, because there's a good chance, probably 50-50, that his hand is better than yours.
Oh.
And why would you want to get into a gambling situation? Why would you want to roll a dice with someone when you know that in the long run you can grind them down?
Mm-hmm.
With players that are too tight, that are too cautious, you don't want to call those players very often at all, but what you want to do is raise, because if they are overly conservative, if they are prone to throw their hands away, raising puts them in a position where they're going to throw away even more hands, and you can win money without having a hand at all.
So that's really, really good advice, and I appreciate that. So you talked a little bit about some of the betting tells, about how we can know just sort of the type of player, if they have a tendency to be a fish, that is calling too many flops, throwing the hand away, overly conservative, maybe reluctant to continue to raise a raised pot. That's the type of player we're talking about, right?
Yeah, you're talking about somebody that's essentially a pretty soft player.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are players that have played for years and are still fish, and the reason they are is simple. They enjoy poker far too much. Now, nobody goes to a casino or a card room to throw away hand after hand. They go there to play hand.
They go there to get some action, to get into the play. They go there what they came there for. They came there to play.
And they came there to have fun. Now, if you go there to play and you go there to win money, your strategy is going to be a whole lot different than it is if you went there just to
a pleasure player,
some sort of gamble.
I understand what you're saying. So what happens if, let's say we signal to the table that we are a fish, accidentally, intentionally, whatever. What can you expect in terms of a counterattack from the other pros at the table?
You can expect a number of things. You can expect that if you bet, you will be raised. You can expect that if you raise, you will be re-raised. you can expect that if you check, somebody will bet into you. You're going to attract...
get action. You're going to attract action, right?
I mean, the fish alert is going off in the minds of all the other better players at the table. And they're looking for opponents that are weak. And
right,
you know, if somebody is unable to protect themselves at a poker table, then they're the ones that are going to be attacked.
You know, I really like the way that the way you just presented that information, because really, you know, it's very important for you to understand your own table image, which we can get back into that a little later in our podcasting series, but we want to probably be aware of if we are signaling that we're a fish, and we can do that unintentionally. But new players, you know, there's a lot of finesse in this game. There are so many factors to learn, so many nuances, right? Every hand is different, and lots of different reasoning can apply to the way you want to bet that hand. So in the early stages of our development as poker players, we may be signaling that we are indeed a fish. Now, I got a question for you then. How do the fish, right, turn the table on the players who now attack them, call them just to outplay them? How does the fish reel in the fishermen?
How does the fish reel in the fisherman?
Yeah.
How does the lettuce eat the rabbit? Well, first of all, if you are indeed a real fish, you're not going to eat the fisherman or catch the fisherman, because you won't realize that what you're doing is sending off signals.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be blind to what's going on at the table, that
right.
There's communication established with every turn of the card in poker, every time you move chips.
I love the way you just said that.
Because in action, you're communicating
right.
to other players at the table that you have something or you don't have something or you're representing something. Now, if you're smart, and women have a big edge here, because a lot of guys think that women can't play poker, and they still think this despite the fact that there are astoundingly good women poker players such as Jennifer Harmon.
Absolutely. We just need somebody to win the big one.
If you go into a card room and you bat your eyes naively and say something like, "How much can I bet?"
What's the name of the game again?
Yeah. How much can I bet? And then you make that bet. Unless somebody has a huge hand, you're going to win that pot. Because they're just thinking, my God, this person that doesn't know anything about the game is telling us that they have a really big hand.
Oh, yeah.
I better throw my hand away,
right.
Unless I happen to have a full house or something, and that's very unlikely. So that's a way you can turn the tables, by personifying yourself as a fish. However, that's only going to work one or two times. You can't come back week after week,
right,
play against the same players
and pretend to be a fish.
Those tricks are going to work.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right, so you have to use them very sparingly, if at all, right, occasionally. There's a time and a place for everything. That's what we're learning in these poker podcasts, is there's so many strategies, and there is an appropriate time and appropriate place, which is one of the reasons why you get a lot of answers to many poker questions. It depends.
It does depend.
Yeah.
And one of the big things that people don't talk a lot about in poker is representation. What are you representing that you have? And who are you representing that you are? Mike Caro, the mad genius of poker, has written on a number of occasions that it's best to have a really loose, wild man image and do that when you first sit down, because you're going to get call after call after call the rest of the time you're at the session. And, you know, that works for Mike, because if you look at him, he looks like he has "I am a mad genius" tattooed on his forehead. You know, he's wild eyes and, you know, hair sticking straight out.
Oh, see, he sounds like my kind of guy, actually.
Well, Mike is a great guy, and he looks like somebody wondering where the 60s went.
Oh, you know, that's
sort of
funny. See, that's great. That's great. I happen to like that.
That style works for him. He looks
right.
The part.
The style works
so,
for him.
I look so straight and so middle class and so preppy that I will never be able to pull off the wild man image. It just doesn't work for me.
Right.
So what I have to do, I have to make my persona that of a very cautious, deliberate player.
Mm-hmm.
And so that people believe when I bet, I really have a hand, which
mm-hmm.
of course gives me a license to steal until they call me. So I think what you have to do, unless you're a consummate actor who can get into a role and play that role and stay in that role and be convincing, I think for most of us who aren't skilled actors, the trick is to play a role that just takes you further in the direction that you tend to be going in naturally.
And I like it. I think you're right. Sort of be who you are, and then just you just continue to move on in that direction.
Who you are, and a little more than that.
And who you are, but a personified version of who you are, accelerated, or kick yourself up a notch. Well, that's an interesting, an interesting theory for us to ponder, to take a look at our table images and see how we can make that seem just even more prominent than earlier. So we don't have a lukewarm type of image or very, very weak image. We sort of create an image and develop it so that people think we're this type of player. Well, I have another question for you, and you mentioned in your wonderful book that we're talking about today, Secrets the Pros Won't Tell You About Winning Hold'em Poker, you talked about a free card raise, and I'm sure there is a very good time to go after this free card raise. So when do you want to set up a free card raise, and if you'd be willing to give us an example of a free card raise and how a player might use this tactic, that is probably, I guess you're going to tell us that you sort of set it up in advance, that you'd like to set up this free card raise.
Yeah, well, you set up a free card raise when you have a hand that you're hoping is going to improve, and if it does, you can bet it on the next betting round. But if it doesn't, you've set it up so that you can get to look at another card without betting or checking. Let's say that you have 10-9 of spades, and you're in late position, and you call after maybe two or three opponents are already in the pot.
Right.
Now, let's say the flop is Jack-4-9, and two of them are spades. So you've got the second pair, which probably isn't the best hand. You've got a draw to a flush, and if you make it, it's probably going to win the pot for you. And you're last to act. So how do you make the free card play? Well, let's say someone bets, and now you raise, and you're raising essentially with a hand you know probably isn't the best hand.
Right.
Right then and there.
Mm-hmm.
But if it improves on the next card that's dealt on the turn, if it improves there, then you can bet or raise if somebody bets into you, and you will have gotten an additional bet into the pot on this preceding round on the flop. But let's suppose nothing happens. Let's suppose it's a card that doesn't look like it's going to help anybody at all. Suppose it's the three of diamonds. It's not a card that's going to contribute to anyone's flush draw or straight draw or anything else. Now, if everybody follows the normal tendency of checking to the raiser,
right?
Remember, you raise on the flop,
that's right,
on the turn, unless somebody has a really big hand, they're going to check to you. Now you go and check behind them,
mm-hmm.
and you'll get to see the next card for free.
And bingo, free card.
You got a free card, no investment. You're either going to catch a 10, and you'll have two pair, or a 9, and you'll make trips, or any spade, and you will make a flush. And if you don't, you're probably not going to win the pot anyway. That's
right.
A free card play.
Thank you. That was you gave us an excellent description, and I encourage anyone who does want to hear that again to just replay the podcast, listen closely. Excellent description on how to use the strategy. This is a tip, a tactic, a strategy, a ploy, a poker ploy. When do you want to go after the free card raise? It's one of the many, many tools of the trade that the professionals do know and use, of course. That's why they're pros. And we as aspiring professional players do need to know and add to our arsenal, because as Lou said earlier, without these tricks and tools of the trade, you will be at a disadvantage at some point in your game. Now, Lou, here's another important, obviously everything we're going to talk about is very important to our games, and one thing we hear a lot is about mixing up your play at the table, changing speeds. So we've often heard that it's important to change speeds. So I'm wondering about the concept. If you could explain the concept of changing speeds, when and how to change speeds, and why you certainly want to mix up your play.
Okay, that's a great question. And before we get directly into the answer, let me say that if you're playing against people that aren't paying attention to you and are only playing their own cards, not thinking about what you might have, and they're not thinking about what you think they have, then it doesn't pay to change speeds or vary your play, because again, when you're changing speeds, you are broadcasting a message to your opponents. Poker is a game of communication. If somebody's radio is turned off, they're not going to hear what you're saying, so don't bother changing speeds. Don't bother doing anything that takes you off of optimal play. Just play the same way until you know that they've begun to get a feel for what you're doing and are thinking or trying or starting to change their own play in response to what you're doing. Now, suppose you come across as a very, very tight player in the beginning of the game, and then you throw in a bluff and you take the pot because people are thinking, gee, that person never bets unless they have a great hand. I better fold.
Mm-hmm.
So you can bluff again.
Right.
And you can bluff again. And they will think, oh, my God, person's on a rush. They've had three big hands. And then a fourth hand comes up and on the turn, a third diamond is dealt, and everybody checks, and you bet, and they think, ah, he never bets. He's got a diamond flush. I fold. So you've changed speeds.
Right, right.
They look like they're getting upset, or they look like they're about to start calling you. Then you can go back and play cautiously and only come out raising when you have a very good hand. And hopefully you get to show down that hand, which will confirm in your opponent's mind that my God, Krieger never raises unless he has the nuts, unless he has a really great hand. Therefore, when he bets or raises, I'm throwing away my hand if it's not just a wonderful one.
Sure, absolutely. And you know, we have so much to cover. We're going to be doing several podcasts with you today, but I've got to just put in this one question that you mentioned earlier, and you talked about rushes, and I want to know your personal opinion based on your personal play and how you feel about the way the cards can fall. Do you believe in rushes?
Well, of course there are rushes, and I believe in them, but let me qualify that.
You got to know when it's over.
You can only see a rush in the rearview mirror.
Mm-hmm.
There is no way to say, you know, in four more hands a rush is coming, and if I stay here and play, if I wait four hands and then play five out of the next six, I'll win $400 more.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work that way. A rush only is definable and visible in retrospect. Now, when you win a couple of hands in a row because you've had a run of good cards, other players begin to change how they see you. They see you as a lucky player. They see you as someone who has been on a rush, and in their minds, that means you're going to continue to be on that rush and continue to make good hands, when in reality, each hand is an individual entity and doesn't bear any relationship to the preceding hand. You could be dealt five good hands, and you could
sure,
five more good hands, or you could be dealt, you know, three, four offsuit or something equally horrible on the next five hands.
Absolutely.
You don't know until it's past you. But your opponents, when you're on a rush, tend to think that you're a little bit more bulletproof than you normally are. And the opposite is true. Suppose you are dealt a pocket pair of aces, and you flop three aces, and oh my God, that's such a great hand, but you lose when somebody backdoors their way into a straight or a flush. It's a bad beat. And let's say you lose a couple of other hands where you were the favorite, then your opponents are going to look at you as weak and unable to defend themselves, and
good point.
They are then going to try to kick sand in your face.
Unable to defend yourself, that is, not able to play the pocket aces appropriately for what the flop was, etc. So I think that's a really great point, and we'll get into that, how to play these hands defensively, aggressively, as we move through the podcast with Lou Krieger, who is my expert today, my poker pro, author of Secrets the Pros Won't Tell You About Winning Hold'em Poker. And I've got another question for you, and this is something very interesting. And you mentioned in the book, Secrets the Pros Won't Tell You, that if you're thinking about playing a hand, why not think about raising? And I thought, you know, good question. Let's ask Lou about that.
That's one of my favorite topics, and I guess it all gets back to people have default positions that they take when they play poker, just like your computer defaults to certain settings. And most people's default position when they play poker is to call. And I'm going to tell you that while calling does have a place in poker, if you think about your hand, think first about whether you should fold or raise, and lastly think about calling. If your hand isn't worth playing at all, then you should fold it and not call. But if your hand is worth calling, if you look at your hand and say, well, I can call with this, ask yourself, hey, can I raise with this? And
right.
You might be able to do it. We gave an example earlier when we were talking about the free card raise, of raising with a drawing hand. Now, you have, let's say you're dealt ace-king of clubs, and, you know, two clubs come on the flop. You have a really good drawing hand. You know, you don't have a hand yet. You're probably behind if somebody, you are behind if somebody has a pair. But if a club comes, or even if you pair your ace or pair your king on the turn, you've got a very, very good chance of winning that pot. So why not either bet or raise and get some more money in the pot?
Mm-hmm.
Now let's say one player calls and there are four or five players behind you. I would call then because I want to lure those additional customers into the pot. If I raise, I might drive them away. But suppose you're last and the action goes bet, call, 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 and now it's up to you. So you've got four people in there for one bet, and you know that somebody that's in there for one bet is in there for a raise as well. Now you've got ace-king suited, you've got a flush draw, you're likely to win the pot if you pair your ace or pair your king. Go ahead and raise. You want to get more money in the pot. You're less than a 2-to-1 underdog to make your flush, plus the possibilities of pairing your cards, your king or your ace, gives you 15 outs, 15 cards to complete your hand. And you know, when you have 15 outs,
that's nice.
Odds-on favorite to win.
Uh-huh.
So go ahead and put more money in the pot, because statistically, it's going to become yours. And if you were to repeat that hand hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, you know, you'd lose some and you'd win some, but in the long run, you'd come out way ahead by raising, because you'd get more money and you're favored to win it.
That's wonderful. Now I'd like to talk about this, because this seems to happen a lot in any poker game. I'd like you to comment a little bit about limping. You say in your book, Secrets the Pros Won't Tell You About Winning Hold'em Poker, that limping, unless you're trapping, right, is like painting a hit me with your best shot on your back. And I found that amusing and true, and I'd love for you to comment on that for our listeners.
Well, when you limp, when you just call, you're really inviting others into the pot with you, and you're giving them an opportunity for the price of one bet to get lucky. And if
right.
you are able to induce three or four people in
mm-hmm.
there, the fact that there are that many of them in there means that probably someone other than you is going to win that hand. There's a great herd mentality in poker. And if I call an early position and someone else calls behind me, limps in, there's almost a daisy chain effect, and it's going to attract more players. They look and see, and wow, four people are already in this pot. It's only going to cost me one bet.
Right, exactly.
I could get lucky.
Yeah.
If I get lucky, I'm going to trap five players
mm-hmm.
for a bunch of bets. I'm going to win a ton of money. I think I will daisy chain in too. Now,
right.
The flop is going to help someone. And when you have that many players in the pot, someone is going to love the flop. Many other players aren't, and the odds are that if you pick any specific one person out of the pot, they're not going to like the flop. So what happens is you're inviting people in to beat you, and you're inviting them in inexpensively.
Right, I understand. Now, the next thing that sort of follows is now when you raise when entering a pot, what type of trouble do you avoid, and do you attract, what do you attract to yourself when you're raising? What are you signaling? What type of trouble do you avoid, which is what you just went over a little bit, having
yeah.
a daisy chain? Mm-hmm.
When you raise, you're saying, I've got a big hand. If you want to call me, if you want to play around with me, if you want to hit me with your best shot, you're going to have to pay double to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And because I raise now, you know I'm going to probably come out betting.
It's going to be an expensive thing
if you bet on
yeah.
the next hand. So it's going to be costly to you if you want to play against me.
But, you know, I've got to say, I do see a lot of people do call those big raises. Now, why are they doing so?
For a couple of reasons. They may be calling a raise because they have a very good hand.
As well.
And that's, mm-hmm. that's what you want to avoid. I mean, look, if somebody is sitting there with, say, a pocket pair of jacks and you raise with ace-queen or ace-king, that pocket pair of jacks is definitely going to call.
Right. So you know you're playing against something,
point,
yeah.
At this point, he's got the better hand.
Mm-hmm.
You also have people that will call raises because they like big pots.
Yes,
they're just
right.
adrenaline junkies, and you have to learn
mm-hmm.
by characterizing
right.
your opponents which ones are which. You know, again, some people, if they call my raise, if they cold call two bets, I know they've got a hell of a hand, and I'm going to be wary of them.
Very
Let's
fine.
Say I have a pair of tens and I raised with it.
Mm-hmm.
And suppose the flop was queen, king, four. So there are two over cards. Now, let's say that person who I know wouldn't have called without a big pair or big cards in his hand. Let's say he comes out betting, or worse yet, I bet and he raises. I'm going to give that person credit for a big hand because I know their playing style.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to probably throw my pair of tens away. Now, if he was able to bluff me off the pot on that particular hand, more power to him.
Mm-hmm.
In the long run, I know that when he makes that play, he's making it with far the better
mm-hmm.
hand.
Right.
Now, there are other players who are just action junkies.
Mm-hmm.
And if I raise, they're going to re-raise, and I won't necessarily credit them with anything, and I will come right out, I will come out betting right into their re-raise, because I know that although, you know, they're as likely to be dealt a pair of aces as anybody else, chances are they are just fooling around with any two cards and trying to seize control of the hand and push me off a big hand and win the pot.
So I have a question for you now. We'll just go on to, you know, limping versus raising. When do you want to limp and when do you want to raise? And then to maybe you could talk about raising hands. What are some good raising hands?
You really want to raise if you're playing limit poker with big pairs.
Mm-hmm.
Because big pairs, you don't want a lot of people drawing against you to beat you. So you want to get more money in the pot from fewer players, and so you do that by raising.
Mm-hmm.
You also want to raise with a hand like ace-king or ace-queen. They're not made hands yet, but one-third of the time, you're going to catch an ace or a king on the flop, and you're going to be way in the lead. And if you don't, it may be the kind of flop that doesn't figure to hit anybody. Suppose it's heads up, yourself and one other player, and you have ace-king, and he has any other hand that's not a pair, and the flop comes 9-5-3, all uncoordinated cards. He may have a 9 in his hand, or a 5, or a 3, but chances are he doesn't, and chances are you're still in the lead with ace-king.
Right. So the question for you is, limping when you're trying to trap, why don't you explain when you are trapping and how do you want to use limping to do so?
Okay, limping has a role in poker, and it's not always a weak play. Limping is best done when you have a speculative hand, and you want to see the flop cheaply and see what develops and make a decision about how you want to play from there. Let me give you a specific example. We talked about earlier somebody limps and a bunch of players daisy chain in, and then everybody's calling with all sorts of hands. Suppose I have 9-8 of hearts, and there are 3 or 4 players already in the pot. Now, I'm going to want to play that 9-8 of hearts. It's nothing yet, but it's a hand that can easily grow into a straight. It can grow into a flush. Maybe if I'm lucky, I can make 2 pair with it. But why would I raise with that hand if I miss the flop?
Sure.
And the flop figures to miss me 2 out of 3 times, I am going to be left with a hand that's 9 high.
Mm-hmm.
A hand that stands much of a chance of winning anything.
I usually say one rule of thumb that I have in that situation is that I always say, am I able to defend a re-raise against me?
Yeah.
You know, and something with an 8-9 of hearts, I wouldn't be able to defend myself against that particular play. So that's why the limping is just to give you an opportunity to see the flop if possible.
Yeah, you know, that's a great way to look at it. And, the 9-8 of hearts has no value immediately.
When
you're thinking of calling, that's a worthless hand. And in fact, 2/3 of the time, you're going to wind up with 9 high and some over cards, and somebody's going to bet. And at that point, you have no hand, no draw, and no hope, and no choice but to throw that hand away.
Sure. Sure, but meanwhile, you did have the opportunity to flop a monster, as we call it.
Absolutely.
Or a hand with potential.
You want to do that as cheaply as possible.
Absolutely.
And not make it expensive on yourself. Now, if you look at no limit hold'em, it exemplifies that even more so. Let's say that you're playing a deep stack game. Let's say the blinds are 2 and 5, and you're at a table, and you and everybody else has $4,000 to $5,000 in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a 9-8 is a great hand to play then if you can play it inexpensively, because more so than fixed limit hold'em, no limit hold'em is a game that's based on implied odds. It's based on what can the future bring, even if it's a long shot compared to the cost to play now. So if I can see flop with 9-8 of hearts, once in a blue moon, I may flop a flush, or I may flop a straight, or I may flop 2 pair, or I may flop trip 9s or trip 8s. And all of those are going to be pretty hidden because no one's going to put me on the hand that I have, and I stand a chance of taking every one of my opponent's chips if he also has a hand.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take a lot of chances in no limit if they're inexpensive. You can take a lot of long shots because it only takes one to overcome all of those long shots that you took and put you into profit. You don't have that chance in a fixed limit game because if you get very lucky, suppose you have 9-8 of hearts and you flop a straight flush, and you know you can't lose, all you're going to make is one bet each time out unless someone else has a hand worth raising with. So you're not going to make a lot of money, and it's not going to be enough to overcome all those times that you're trapped in the sunshine with, you know, hands like when you're trapped in the sunshine and all you have is a 9-8 suited, you know, and
right.
No open hands. So,
all right. Well, on to our last question, if you've completed your thought on that.
I have. I was just going to say that No Limit illustrates some of this stuff a lot more clearly.
Right, I see. Of course.
And then Fixed Limit, because of the potential for losing a lot of money or having drastic results.
Well, this is wonderful. And just one last question. I know this comes around, you know, once around, actually, once a rotation. Hey, what about raising on the button? Would you like to just talk a little bit about, you know, when is an ideal time to raise on the button?
To raise on the button?
Mm-hmm.
Boy, anytime you want to get more money in the pot.
Mm-hmm.
Suppose you have a pair of kings in the pocket. Why not raise on the button? Suppose
sure.
You have ace-king. You don't have a pair. And you have a bunch of callers. If you raise on the button rapid, you're going to play the hand anyway, so it's not ever a matter of folding. It's only a choice between calling and raising. If you call, you are not in a good position to represent a
strength.
Big hand.
Mm-hmm.
if big cards fall.
Mm-hmm.
Now, suppose you raise and the flop is 9-4 deuce. Doesn't look like it hit you, doesn't look like it hit anyone. But because you raised before the flop, if your opponents don't have anything,
right.
They have to credit you with having at least big cards, which beat what they have, or worse,
or pocket
you have
pair.
A pair.
Mm-hmm.
So you extend the range of hands you can represent to your opponent. For that to make sense, your opponents have to be savvy enough to think in those terms. If your
right.
opponent looks down and says, boy, 9-5 deuce, and I have 10-7, and I don't think about what anybody else has at the table, then all of the
finesse in the
messages
world.
You've been broadcasting have just fallen upon deaf ears.
Sure, sure, because they don't know enough to know enough. So that can happen, though. I've seen it many times. But I guess we have to deal with every situation as it comes upon us. And I think as everyone's skill set does increase, they'll start to realize that those hands just really don't have the potential they need to be wagering on them, of course. Right?
It's a lesson for real life as well as poker. You have to deal with what comes your way as it comes your way.
That's a very good point, Lou. You're absolutely right. You know, I want to thank Lou Krieger today. Lou is the author of Secrets the Pros Won't Tell You About Winning Hold'em Poker. He's written this book with co-author Sherry Bykofsky. You can visit Lou's website at www.loukrieger, that's LOUKRIEGER, .com for lots more information and, of course, to check out his other books. Lou will be back for our next podcast. Meanwhile, all for now. Thanks again, Lou, and we'll talk to you very, very soon.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.